You're listening to Critical Reads. This show is designed to help people critically analyze topics like race, culture, and faith, one resource at a time. I am your host, Neff Lesperance. Hey everyone, before I go ahead and play this week's episode, I just wanted to jump in with a quick little intro before my actual intro. This episode will be broken up into two episodes. I forgot when we first recorded this, talking about this anthropology TV series that it ended up being pretty long, and not long in a bad way, but I just didn't want to have you all have to sit through 2 hours worth of content. So I decided this week that I'm going to split it up. So this week you'll have part one, next weekend you'll have part two. And so I do hope that you get out of this episode and next episode something really good centered around mental health from me and my good friend Diane. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode. I am looking forward to talking about a show today with you guys that is kind of centered around mental health in honor of this month, May, being Mental Health Awareness Month. So I'm really excited to bring on my very special guest, Diane, who I usually invite on when we talk about all things movies and TV shows. Diane, you want to say hello to everybody?
Hi. I always get nervous on these, even though it's essentially just me talking to like my best friend.
I know, for real. It's like, it's like us taking our phone calls and putting it in podcasts. Maybe with a little less cursing.
Yeah, a little bit more diplomatic.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, welcome back, Diane. So today, like I said, we were going to do this episode from this TV show that is called Modern Love. The episode that we're going to be doing today is from season one, episode three. It's called Take Me As I Am, Whoever I Am. And we're really excited to do this episode because from watching this show, and especially this first season, this was actually one of our favorite ones. I think Diane, probably a little bit more than me in level of excitement. I think your excitement level is a little higher, but literally this is one of my favorite episodes. I think there's maybe one other one at this season that I enjoyed, but in general, this is a very good show. But we'll get to why we enjoyed this episode in a bit, but we're excited to do this episode with you guys. And I hope that from our conversation that you guys are able to learn a little bit more about mental health, because the general topic that will be talked about in this episode is living with mental health, in particular having bipolar disorder. And like I said, we'll talk about that in a bit. But I think because most people don't talk about this enough, we both were like, let's do something like on this month that we can kind of just talk about something that we don't always talk about, just like we kind of did with Inside Out. But this one is more like, I guess this is not like a rated G version as much, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. It's more like real life characters, I guess is a good way to put it. Because I feel like Inside Out was very like animated and it's very easy to like remove yourself from it in some ways. But having it be like a real person that you're like having to see their life, it made it a little bit more relatable, I guess, for me is what I would put. I don't know if you would say the same, but yeah, that's why we're hoping that you guys can get from this. So I know normally I start at each episode talking a little bit about things that I reflect on and stuff, using my segment, Musings of a Tired Black Social Worker. This week, we're not going to do that. Instead, we're going to do something that we did similar to one of the last episodes I did with Diane, where when Inside Out, we kind of talked about something at the end. So stay tuned. At the end, we'll kind of be doing a version of A Tired Black Social Worker, a remix, if you will. But before we get into that, let's talk about the movie. And before we talk about the movie or the show, why do I keep saying movie? I think I'm so used to us doing movies that I'm having to reframe my mind to that. But before we get into the show, I'm going to take a minute to just kind of explain a little bit about what the show is about. Again, which is funny, I keep having to do both Wikipedia and what the actual producer says. So I'm going to read both, and they're both really, really short, but I'm going to just read a little bit, just introducing what the show is about, and then a little bit about the director, which is also pretty short. So and describing the show. This was done by Amazon Studios, so you can find it on Amazon Prime, obviously. And Amazon Studios says the following: an unlikely friendship, a lost love resurface, a marriage at its turning point, a date that might not have been a date, an unconventional new family. These are unique stories about the joys and tribulations of love, each inspired by a real-life personal essay from the beloved New York Times column, Modern Love. And this show was directed by John Carney, Sharon Hogan, Emmy Rossum, and Tom Hall. And I know they also have some other people that kind of come in and help with directing between this season and the second season. So just be aware of that. I wasn't going to list out every single person because we would be here all day. But these are, like, I guess the main few that are helping directing. And I think John Carney also helps with producing the show as well. And then the Wikipedia version just kind of says, Modern Love explores love in its multitude of forms, including sexual, romantic, familial, platonic, and self-love, which are presented in 8 half-hour episodes. The Amazon series, based on the New York Times column of the same name, adapts different love stories taking place in New York City. So, 2 ways of basically saying the same thing, which is cool. And then very quickly, I found a little bit on John Carney, who is one of the people that helped direct and produce the show. But based on Wikipedia and IMDb, a combination of the two, I basically got from this that he is an Irish film director, producer, screenwriter, and lyricist who specializes in low-budget musical drama films. He is best known as the showrunner and executive producer of Modern Love on Amazon Prime Video for his 2007 movie Once and the film Sing Street. He is also a co-creator of the Irish TV drama series Bachelor's Walk. So that's cool. I didn't know about Sing Street. I've heard about Once before. So I was like, oh, that's cool. But everything else, I was like, I've never heard anything about this man. I don't know about you, Diane. Have you ever heard about this guy at all?
No, at all. No.
Yeah. So both of us are like, quién sabe. I mean, I'm sure there's other things that if you look him up, you're probably like, oh yeah, I know this movie, or maybe, but a lot of stuff I don't know. Yeah. I've only heard of Once and that was it. And then obviously Modern Love, but most of the stuff, like, I'm like, I don't know much about this guy, but I'm very happy that he's famous and he created this work, because this show is actually really good. Mm-hmm. And without him, maybe the show wouldn't have been, who knows? So yeah. So very quickly, as we normally do, we're going to talk a little bit about what made us pick this show. I was telling Diane when we were planning, for me, I just basically picked watching this show because of Diane. Diane is like, hey, I have this show that I really enjoy. I think you should check it out. And I was like, why not? You know? Yeah, because I think when I decided to watch this show, I had just finished watching Fleabag, another show that you recommended to me. And because I really liked Fleabag, I was like, you know what? I trust Diane's judgment. Let's watch another show. Even though I think your judgment on these shows are pretty good. But yeah. So that was why I chose to watch the show. But what about you? What made you choose to watch the show?
I mean, the reason why I chose to watch, it's pretty shallow. It's not because I heard of it. It's not because someone told me, like, it was great, wonderful, beautiful, never been done before, very unique kind of show. No, it was just because the thumbnail of the show had the actress that plays the mom in How I Met Your Mother. And they did her so dirty on that show that I will support her in anything that she fucking does from here on out. Like, that is the only reason.
Wait, but then why is that shallow? I think that's very nice.
Well, because it literally was because of her, not because of the show. Does that make sense? So it's like, and each show, I guess it's important to acknowledge is that each episode within the show, mm-hmm, is a different storyline, different people, different characters. It's a, what do you call it? Anthropology?
Yeah, it's an anthropology. That's what they're calling this, a TV anthropology, which I think, okay, that's really cool. And it's interesting because I'm starting to see that there are a lot of shows that are like taking this route. I just saw that recently, I guess there's a show that Issa Rae is going to be on where
called they did.
Yeah, they just did another.
100%. I already know. Like, there are only three actresses that I want to see in that movie. Issa Rae, Betty Gilpin, and Alison Brie. That is
the only three. The rest, you're like, take it or leave it.
Those are the only three episodes I'm going to log in and watch, and then I'm going to get out.
And then like, you go exit stage, right?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I might, like, depending on if I like it, because Issa's episode is the first one.
And okay.
Yeah. And then Betty, I think her name is Gilpin, her episode is 3, and then Alison Brie is episode 5. So I'm like, maybe I'll watch the
other. They probably purposely spread it out so that people will follow each
one. Yeah. But it's so fun. Like, I love these women. When I saw that they were all in this show, I was very excited. Alison Brie is another one that I will watch anything that she is in.
That's so funny. But honestly, what you're saying, though, I think that's what everybody does. Because I know for me, there's a lot of movies or even TV shows that I will watch just because a certain actress or actor is in it, even if it ends up being trash, just because they're in it. Like, for example, Sandra Bullock, I don't know why she got me in a chokehold. But if she's in it, I'll watch it.
Oh my goodness.
Same thing with Melissa McCarthy, even though I haven't watched that TV show that she's in right now. There's a TV show that she's currently in that I haven't watched. But if she's in it, more than likely, I will sit it. Even if it's like a trash movie, a trash show, I will sit in most cases and watch it because she's in it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we all kind of have our people that we do that for. But it's cool to see, like, I guess that, you know, a lot of these different networks are kind of transitioning a little bit or trying to be creative in like how they do some of their programming and making it different. So making shows and stuff like the Anthropology type way looks kind of cool to me. I know there's also this show called Life in Pieces that kind of has that.
Love Life in
Pieces. Yeah. So I kind of, I like that style of show, even though like, at the end of the day, you're like trying to follow this family, but they still kind of do it that way. Like
in every episode, it follows this family, but like it's like a family made up of three different families.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than three, it's like four, but each.
And there's like, there's stuff that sometimes you're like, this isn't even connected to the episode, but the way that it, I mean, it's pretty well done. I like the show. So I like that they're doing that with some shows now. I hope they don't kill the concept because I feel like that's what Americans do. Like the concept is kind of good and then they like burn it out.
We're like, wow, this makes us money. Mm-hmm. Let's fucking overkill.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, just like similar to what they're doing with the reboots.
Well, yeah, the reboots, because they're like, let's use nostalgia as a way to get money. And they're just too afraid to lean on new ideas because it's too risky.
Exactly. And I feel like it's kind of a way to like make us millennials like feel better too, or like distract us, like let's just keep bringing back stuff. I know
we're definitely using nostalgia as a tool to like as a way to profit off of us. But I think that's why like streaming services right now are kind of winning, because they're willing to lean into these new ideas. You know, for example, there's this show on Apple TV called Severance. And I don't know if you've heard of it or if you even have ever seen a trailer, but it is really fucking good. It is an incredible show. And this is the first thing this man has ever done in his life.
Are you serious?
There is nothing. You look at his IMDb page, you will see tumbleweeds because it's completely deserted. It is except for Severance. Like there is nothing else prior to this. And I think, I feel like that kind of shows that streaming services are willing to take a chance on these people with these really unique ideas that Hollywood isn't, because they're too afraid, it's too risky or whatever. And I think this is why streaming services are winning. This is why they're getting all the great movies, all the great writers, all the great TV shows, whatever.
That's crazy to think about. I know we're like doing a bunch of rants within a rant, but it's okay. Stick with us, everybody. So, no, but that is really an interesting topic. I didn't know that. But anyways, thank you all for keeping up with our brand a little bit. But to kind of get us back on track, like I said, today we're going to be talking about this show because the topic that they kind of cover on the show is, or at least this episode, is mental health. They cover mental health and bipolar disorder. And we kind of get to see through a character played by Anne Hathaway, the struggles of what it's like for a lot of people who do deal with bipolar disorder. And so for both me and Diane, who also struggle with our own mental health issues, like when we saw this episode, we were like, oh my God, because there's so much that we related to, which again, we'll get to. But I think one of the things that I liked about this episode, and I think Diane liked about it too, is that they do a pretty decent job of giving like honest but humanistic, like real view of what does it look like to have bipolar disorder? What does it look like to have to try to figure out how to invite people into that, different things like that. So I think for me, especially as someone that's working to become a clinician or like a licensed social worker, it's so important to amplify shows like this or episodes like this where they're actually giving a really good holistic view of mental illness and not the scary stuff or like the stuff that's, I guess, so covered by stigma that people are like, I don't want to deal with mental illness now because I'm seeing this, right? Because I feel like most movies and shows, when we talk about mental illness, they make them look like they're like only crazy and like there's no hope for them at all. They really paint them in this light that you're like, well, damn.
Yeah, no,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
I'm literally writing like what I like about this depiction of like when she's depressed, watching it, it's boring. And yeah. That's exactly what it is. I look exactly like that.
Exactly.
I'm just in bed. I don't do anything. You know?
Exactly.
So bored. Like I'm not going like crazy off the walls. And I think that's what like, especially bipolar, I think that's kind of like a huge stigma, is that they're really like nuts and like quote unquote broken or whatever. And it's like, no, it's not like that. Like,
yeah,
you're, you know, the low is so low that getting out of bed is like really hard.
Exactly.
And like all you do is just, you're in bed.
And even if they do have some highs, at least from what I've seen working in inpatient, mm-hmm. a lot of it is like they do stuff that mostly like might be harmful to themselves, but not necessarily harmful to others. Yeah. Yeah. So they might be doing more risky behaviors, like riding their motorcycles in ways that aren't healthy, or like they do stuff that you're like, you're putting yourself at risk for death. Like, but they're not really like necessarily hurting other people. Now, there are some people that, and it's a small percentage of people that I think that can get to a place where they're hurting other people. But I also sometimes wonder if that's more like societal stuff too. Like, for example, I think, you know, we've talked about on this podcast before about like just this, how society treats men in terms of like, or I should say how society treats women in terms of like letting men do stuff to us, right? So I think sometimes with men, because they're kind of more socialized, that them being aggressive and taking out their emotions and anger and all this stuff is more acceptable. I wouldn't be surprised if sometimes part of what we see in bipolar or schizophrenia or some of the other stuff where the aggressive behavior is just because we've socialized men into showing sadness, anger, any negative feeling just with aggression. You know what I mean? And so I don't know, that's maybe a study or something that could be considered, but sometimes I wonder that too, because yes, I do see some people in my work that have bipolar or schizophrenia and some of the other things, like they can be somewhat aggressive sometimes, but I think it's also like, because as men, I think that's the only way they've been taught to show emotion. They don't feel like it's safe or okay for them to cry it out, to process it. But in most cases, as women, like we are taught to cry it out some, you know, so, and talk about it. And
not to mention that like men probably bottle things up for so long that they like, when they lose their shit, they lose their shit.
Yeah.
Finally, they've snapped.
Exactly. And of course, this is all like a general brush, because there are men that can be very like sensitive and open and whatever. And there's women that can be the other way too. But
there was this meme where, not even a meme, it was like a response. Like somebody posted on Twitter, it was a woman that was like, how do men like get yelled at and like berated without crying. Like, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And then a man responded and they're like, we just bottle it up for years until we're like 35 and we die of a heart attack. Like, self-induced stress or whatever.
Oh my God, that's so tragic.
It was so grim. And I was like, what the fuck?
That's so bad.
It's also interesting to hear like another man acknowledge, like, we just bottle it up until we can't anymore. And I'm like, I am so sorry.
Yeah. So, but I think even saying all this.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think in all of this too, it would be interesting to kind of see how would we depict the guy side of this on an episode like this. But it was cool. I think it's a good conversation. So let's talk a little bit about the episode and the things that happened and then and kind of, I guess, reconnect us back. Because I know we're kind of skipping ahead and talking about some things. But it's okay, y'all. We just get going wherever we go with it today, and that's okay. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the episode and talk a little bit about what happens in it and what sticks out to us and stuff like that. I know she does open up with like her typing on a profile for her dating site. And I wanted to mention, I chuckled a little bit because she was like, who am I? And I know like as she's like trying to figure out what to write, I was like, oh God, it was so relatable to be like, I don't know what to write. Like, let's start over. Erasing, let's start over. And I know I was like, that's been like for me, one of the hardest things about online dating too, because I'm like, I don't know what to write. And then I also love the fact that eventually her explaining who she is means she has to take like a long-winded story. And I was like, if this isn't relatable as hell.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that.
Girl.
So funny.
Yeah, because I'm like, that's me. First, I can't answer the question. Then I got to give you a long backstory to give you an answer. Like, and I think that's me.
Back in 2013.
Exactly. So I think, but that's so that's like the idea of this episode is like her long-winded answer is like showing you a little bit about her struggle with bipolar disorder. So what she's like essentially like writing in her profile becomes the, is it like the voiceover, I guess, for
the narrative. Yeah,
exactly, for the episode. So I thought that was pretty funny. Like, she just has to, either it's like I can't answer the question or it's like a long-winded one, which I thought was, I'm like, if this isn't me, I don't know what else.
That's so funny.
So from here, like as she's starting to kind of explain her story a little bit from in the long-winded way, you kind of start seeing a little bit of like, it kind of starts, and it's not really, I guess it's not really the montage yet, but it's like you kind of start seeing her in a manic episode type of moment where it's being highlighted.
But we don't know it's like a manic episode.
Well, yes. Yeah. But you see her like happy going to the grocery store. And I love how they kind of
backup dancers.
Yeah. I love how they highlight it with like bright colors, upbeat energy, upbeat music. You see
her outfit is dancing. So cute.
Yes, yeah. Her beautiful outfit. Her hair is like nice and bright and nicely done. She has like red hair for this episode. And so you kind of see like, which we kind of find out later, it's like a manic episode, but you just kind of see how alive and vibrant she is.
And I also think it's like her perspective of the world, right? Like everything is so, because there's like a when she's on her way to work, of course she lives in New York, and at some point it almost feels like you see her in the real world. This is after like the whole grocery store, and you just hear like the loud cars and the beeping and the street life of like New York City. Obviously very different from her going to the grocery store, but I thought it was really interesting how you can see how life actually is, which is basic regular life. But to her, it looks like this grand musical with like dancers and singing and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's like that whole like the glasses half full type of way of living. She's just ready to take on the world, take on everything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see then like, I guess you do find out like she's going to work, but on her way to work, she stops at a grocery store.
Because she has peaches.
Yeah, she wants to get peaches, which I don't know if they ever tell us the significance of the peach. Maybe she just likes peaches. I don't know.
I think she just wanted them.
Okay, and she just wanted
them. It became kind of like an inside joke between her and the guy that she meets.
Okay. Because I didn't know if it was like supposed to symbolize like maybe when she is in a good mood, like she likes peaches. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
So I was kind of like, okay. But she stops before work to go get peaches. And while she's trying to get peaches, she ends up like seeing this very nice, fine looking black man.
Oh my God. I had to write down and like, just like it feels disrespectful to talk about this episode and not acknowledge how gorgeous this man is. Like, it feels rude. It feels sinful. It feels like, it just feels straight up like, it just feels wrong to not acknowledge. Yeah. Because this man, like, you can't talk about this episode and not acknowledge how beautiful he is. Like, it's not just physically, it's like his voice.
Yeah, he's pretty, and then he has like a smooth, chill voice too, which is cool.
And his smile, it's so funny because the way that Anne Hathaway describes him, where she's like, oh, his smile, and he's so sweet, and he's so nice, and he's beautiful. And I'm like, yep, yeah, absolutely, 100%. Usually when they talk about like men in shows like that, I'm like, oh, he's okay, he's all right, like whatever. It almost doesn't feel real, but in this one, I'm like, 100%, absolutely, this man, that like that was written with this man in mind.
That's so funny. And for those out here who want to know who he is, his name is Gary Carr. Yeah, Gary Carr, which I was like, oh, and he's actually from London, England, so that's kind of cool.
I mean, he has an accent in real life because he
did. Yeah, I think so. Well, I saw him on another show, surprisingly, because I'm like, he looks familiar, and he did have an accent, so he's a very nice looking man. But as she's looking for those peaches, he happens to be in that area. They start chatting. And I did think it was interesting that they instantly, like, she starts, like, coming on to him. And she's, like, I thought she was already talking about, like, marriage and kids. And because she was trying to figure out if he was married and if he had a wife and like, all that stuff.
Does your wife and your kids help you eat your fruit salad? No, because I don't have one.
So I was like, all right, Anne.
She came off strong.
I know. I was like, damn, because I can imagine doing that. But I guess I'm more so on the depressed side anyway. So I'm like, no, everything is bad. I'm not going to do all that.
I'm the girl that doesn't ever go to the supermarket because she's still stuck in bed depressed.
Girl, yeah. So I was like, this is a lot. But yeah, but she really wanted to get to know this man. So she went out and did it. And so from their conversations, I think she basically only got peaches. He got some other things. And then they decide, oh, let's go get some coffee. Which I thought was funny because in their banter, you know, it was like, oh, let's get dinner. Okay, but do you have time to get coffee? And then they talked about breakfast, but then I laughed because they kind of decided that breakfast was too intimate or more intimate. And I was like, is it?
It's so funny. And then he says, can I get a scone? And she said, no, that's breakfast.
Yeah.
And they still had breakfast.
Like, I know. Still had
it, like, you know, so it was just really funny how I really like their banter. I think they have excellent chemistry.
Yeah, they did.
I was like, Maybe I'm biased because I think this man is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I can see like them almost like radiating. Is that a mm-hmm. word?
That's radiating. Word. Yeah.
Yeah. Off of each other.
Yeah. But also, even though I know we off the air, we talked about like how you can, when you believe somebody's acting, you can really see them together. Like, so I think with them, like, you can kind of still see them together, even though that they're really acting, but in the show, you're like, wow, they really, really like and care for each other. And they, you know, want to be together, even though, you know, it's like an episode.
Right. Even though I know you're married to like the Chanel family and like whatever. But
yeah, exactly.
He's a Chanel jewelry maker, I think.
He is?
Her husband, Anne Hathaway. Oh, yeah.
Okay, Anne, I see.
He does like jewelry for Chanel or some shit like that.
Bay has the bag and the bag. Okay. I'm just kidding.
I'm kind of wonder, am I right? Maybe I'm not.
I don't know, but if that's the case, damn girl. But yeah, but I did like their banter. I like their chemistry, which was really cool. And it was, I think for me, like, as I'm thinking about it, it's crazy. Like, so she ends up making it to work and she gets there at like 10. Mm-hmm. So low key, I was like, like, what time did you guys actually like meet each other and all this other stuff? Because it's like, all of this happened in the morning. Yeah, all of this happened in the morning. So it's like, were they at the grocery store at 6 a.m. and then probably. What I'm saying, like, I just thought about that. I was like, what time did you guys actually talk to each other and meet each other? You know what I mean? So that was interesting. So yeah, so after they have their little breakfast and they talk and they have really great chemistry, they agree to like meet together for dinner on another day, which is cool. And then Anne ends up having to go to work. I think she was working at a legal place or something. I don't know if she's like a paralegal or an actual lawyer. I wasn't 100% sure what.
She's a lawyer.
She's a lawyer. Okay. So yeah. She's a lawyer. And there's like a Black woman that works with her that really likes her work, who comes in and she's like talking to her. And I loved like their banter too a little bit. Like their chemistry as friends was also pretty cool. Like you could tell like there is some genuine care there, even though they work together. And so I know like already you kind of start to see like a hint of like, oh, there's something wrong with Anne Hathaway because I forget what her name on the sexual show is. I keep calling her Anne Hathaway, but I think on the show she's called what? Lexi. Yeah. So you can kind of start to see, okay, there's something going on with Lexi. What's going on? Because the Black woman, she ends up being like, hey, you have been out 4 days out of 20. And so the people, HR and the powers of B are kind of like concerned about that. And it is really interesting because even though she's been out those 4 days, like she's still like kicking ass at her job, but she's just been out on those 4 days, right? And so that kind of stood out to me a little bit because I think part of me as a person that was trying to work in like social justice stuff, I'm like, oh man, that sucks because whether it is you have bipolar disorder or you have some other like chronic situation going on, I feel like it should be natural that we make some allowances for people's bodies. Like, I mean, I even think about us, our close friend that has Crohn's disease, like to have some allowances for like, hey, like, this person may not be feeling well this week or this month or whatever is going on. And we should be able to work around that. I know in a lot of job spaces, like they don't really create space for that, but I don't know, that kind of popped up for me while I was watching that part of the scene where I was like, damn, like it sucks like that her missing work because of her mental illness could be a thing. I mean, granted, it's not like she disclosed it to her coworkers or anybody, like at least you can see that from that point, like she hasn't told anybody.
Well, she did tell them that she had irritable bowel syndrome.
Oh yeah, that's true thing.
So
yeah,
I don't understand why they also wouldn't be like forgiving or at least lenient on the fact that she's actually sick.
Yeah, you're right about that. I forgot about that part.
Yeah.
But so yeah, so that does definitely bring up to the point of like, okay, we need to be better about that as a society, because it's like she's communicating, hey, I'm sick because of this reason, and still they're like, no, like you need to be here and you haven't been here, so you're at risk at your job. And if that doesn't kind of speak to like how annoying like white supremacy stuff can be, like I don't know what else does. But I mean, because it's like, it's not like it's her fault that she's sick and she's not feeling well. So that was crazy. So I think after they bring that up about her not, you know, being there, she obviously then agrees to like take on some more work because she's like in a good mood. You kind of see that she's picking up stuff really quickly. She's getting stuff done. And of course, like she's getting praised for that, which is interesting. But at the same time, like, yeah, she gets corrected for like not being there, but she's also getting praised because even though she's not consistent with being there all 20 days, she's still getting work done that most people aren't getting done. So that was an interesting thing to kind of highlight about that.
Yeah.
And then after she leaves work, she ends up going back home. And then I thought that this was really interesting too, because then you start seeing like the transition from like her being really high and manic, having her good day, her good mood, she starts transitioning to like her low part, which I know both of us were like, girl, we can relate.
Like, that part was so relatable to me because, like, I have definitely been there. Like, I've definitely been in a situation where it's like, wow, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling wonderful. Life's great. Life's good. And then all of a sudden, like, you can almost feel the serotonin, like, leaving your body. And it's, you just kind of, at least for me, I can feel it. I can feel that down coming in, and you're just kind of like, oh no. And at least for me, there wasn't much that I can do. And I don't have bipolar. I'm not bipolar, but I can still feel when the low starts to really come in. Mm-hmm. And just like her, I just lock into bed. Like, when I say lock in, I mean like covers in, like lights off, like just everything on a lockdown kind of situation. So
yeah, same. And I know, especially when COVID happened and I had to come back home and all that stuff, like, and I was working from home, so there would be a lot of days, like, literally I did not get out of bed.
Yes.
Unless I had to shower or like eat something, and that was it. Because I was and I think, thank God, it kind of helped out that I was doing some work from home. So I still had to do some editing. I had to show up here and there for like meetings. So that kind of made me have to try a little bit. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I would be like in bed. And sometimes, like, even stuff I had to do, I would do them like at the last minute, because most of the time I was just like, I don't have the energy or the desire. Yeah. It's like, I guess I'll get done, but I don't give a shit if it doesn't. I think, and the worst part is, like, sometimes we kind of get rewarded for that behavior in a way, because, like, we're good at, like, what we do. So even if we're doing it at the last minute, like, we did a good job. So people are like, oh my God, this was so great. Thank you. But they don't know that 40 to 50 hours before turning the thing in, I was like laying in bed, and then like I quickly got it done in like an hour and a half or 2 hours. What I mean, so I agree. Like, we kind of can see ourselves in her character, because like instantly it's like straight to bed, not answering your phone, mm-hmm. not texting anybody, mm-hmm. not on social media. All the lights are out of the room. Like, the only thing that you have is you and your thoughts, and that's it, type of thing. And so I did like how with this episode, the directors and the writers were very intentional of like picking music that kind of reflected the mood. So like, mm-hmm. obviously when she was in her manic state, it was like very upbeat, bright colors, all the, you see energy, you see dancing. But when she was in her low mood, her outfit was kind of drabby. Lights are out, hair is in disarray.
Literally a nest, but same. Like, there have been times where I don't brush my hair. It is in a knot for like 4 days, because mm-hmm. even though like I'll take a shower, I know that washing my hair is going to take longer. Therefore, I don't want to do it.
Yeah,
so I'll put like the shower cap on, or I'll leave it in a bun and it'll stay that way. And then when it's time to like, when I'm like, I know I have to brush it, it looks exactly like that. Exactly. Like,
yeah.
Like, so messy, such a mess. Like, I can tell, like, looking at Anne Hathaway's hair when she's all disheveled, I'm like, I know there's at least like 3 knots in there.
Sure. You're like, you good. And I know for me, I mean, I have locks now, so it's not like my hair could get that disheveled. But mm-hmm. I know there was a period where like, there was like new growth, and it was like really, really bad new growth. Like, not to this, I'm not trying to make a comment about bad black hair, but in the sense of like, my new growth is starting to get knotted. Like, it was bad. So I know, like, when I moved here, I was very slow about getting a new hairdresser because I was depressed for a good chunk of the time.
Yeah.
So when I finally had to figure out getting my hair retwisted, mm-hmm. I was afraid. I'm like, am I going to have to like get my hair like cut off and start all over? Because I was so depressed and I was not giving a shit about my hair. That it was starting to like knot a little bit, and even figuring out how to separate it from each other, because Because one thing that can happen is they can nut into each other. And so it really turns into like
mess. That's stressful.
So I was like, there was a point where I knew I was like pulling them apart. So yeah, it happens. So yeah. I had my version of a bird's nest and I was like, oh Lord, like how do I fix this? Thank God I didn't have to cut anything, but I related.
There have been times where I cannot handle like the task of, this is how depressed I was, where I could not handle the task of brushing my hair. So I would ask Michael to do it.
No,
and there was time, there were times where, maybe like a few times, I don't know where he is, but there were a few times where I'd be like, okay, here's the brush. And I would split it like in two, and then he would just do one side. And we would just watch TV as he's like brushing my hair because I was so depressed. I knew it had to get done. Like the task had to get done, but I knew that it's so ridiculous saying out loud and so crazy that depression did not allow me to brush my hair because I just physically couldn't. And I don't think people realize that, or people that maybe don't suffer from depression when they see this show, they're like, why can't Anne Hathaway just get up? Mm-hmm. Why can't she just get up and do stuff? And it's like, man, I couldn't fucking brush my own hair.
Yeah.
but that's just what mental illness does. It just brings you to like such a low. And so I needed help. And Michael was willing to be like, okay. And then
yeah,
brush my hair. But
and usually the people that give us the most pushback though are the ones that are like very like, let's go get them attitude, like pray or it like away.
Positive.
Or toxic positivity. Toxic positivity. Ugh, yes. Those are annoying. It's like, well, it's fine. You just got to, no, just no. No, I don't want to hear.
Look on the bright side. Get bright side. It's dark and rainy outside.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like shut the fuck up.
No, but yeah, I get it. Yeah. So I think both of us kind of related in our own way to her sadness and her getting out of bed. And then eventually the guy, Jeff, ends up calling her. And being like, yo, the date tonight.
Like, no, he's like literally a few minutes away from her house.
Yeah.
Calls her and he's like, hey, just checking that I have the right apartment. And she is still in her low and she picks up the phone and she's like, and she's barely like answering. So he knows something's wrong. And so he goes to the door. She opens the door. She looks. She did not change. She did not brush her hair. She did not change her clothes. She comes out exactly the way that she was in bed and she's like, hey, whatever, and everything is so off and he can tell that she is just not herself, but she agrees to go on the date anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might be like, why does she decide to go? Like, I don't understand. And like, I also relate to this because there have been times where my friend would be like, hey, let's go to the movies, or hey, let's go drinking or whatever. And there have been times where I've gone to the bar in like sweatpants because I want to be a part of it, because I know that like that is something that I would actually enjoy. So I don't want to say. And also sometimes you just want to be sad around other people. Like, it's weird, but like sometimes it just kind of feels nice to feel another presence around.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. And so maybe, I don't know if maybe that's why, like that's why she still went on a date. But I know for sure I've hung out with friends and like I go to bars and I look like a mess. And,
yeah, same. It's like on the inside, you're like, I know I don't want to be here. But at the same time, you're like, you want to be there because you want to get out and do something.
Yeah,
but you don't know how to like help yourself like enjoy, or like how to, I guess, make yourself enjoy it, even though you're like, ugh, that's hard.
I've been exactly in her position where somebody comes out and you're like, fine, I'll go, but you are in no position to go. Like, you look a mess, you sound a mess. And the thing is that when you're there, like there have been times where like my friend will, he's super nice, he's very sweet. And he'll ask me like several times, like this happened on different occasions where he's like, are you okay? You don't look very good. Like, you don't look like, are you sick or something? And of course I never told him that I was depressed, but like, I would just be like, no, I'm just really tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, oh, I just have a migraine, or, which most of the time I did have a migraine, but whatever, I give like whatever excuse, but like, they know that there's something wrong. And you're just like, that's fine. It's okay, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And it's really interesting because I know with Anne, I always have mixed feelings about this episode. Because on one hand, like Jeff, I know he tries a little bit because he like gives her like this fake peach. She's like trying to be sweet in his own way. Mm-hmm. But then like, for me, I also had this feeling of like, I don't know, it feels like he wants to be with her because of how she made him feel when they first met. Mm-hmm. And it's more about that. So because she wasn't like on, like mm-hmm. how she was before, he's kind of like, what the hell? But then at the same time, on the other hand, I'm like, Anne, or what's her name, Lexi, like, please, Lexi, tell him what's going on. Because the fact that she's like, oh, it's not a big deal, I'm okay. Like, because I feel like if she would have told him ahead of time, like, hey, I'm sorry, I struggle with bipolar disorder. This is something that's going on with me. Like, it could have probably helped him kind of figure out a little bit more about, like, what do I do? Yeah. What can I do? Especially, like, let's say if he really did like her, right? But she didn't feel safe enough to say that kind of stuff, or like confident in herself enough to say, or like, I maybe it's not confident. It's like, she just didn't feel like it was something she could share.
Yeah. I don't think she ever had the opportunity when she was growing up to like feel that vulnerable with somebody to say mm-hmm. something.
Exactly.
What's funny is that like, I also, what I like about this episode, it deals with mental illness, but it also deals with partially a side of like the dating world, right? And how to like navigate that. And I 100% like understand where you're coming from, where it's like, did Jeff just like her because he reminded her of like Rita Hayworth? And not just the fact that he reminded her of Rita Hayworth, but like because she came out of like mm-hmm. the aisle in this like beautiful outfit, gorgeous hair, like just illuminated his life. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, do you like her just because she can do that? Or do you actually find her interesting and all this stuff because of who she is, as opposed to what she can do for you?
Exactly. And I think we've talked about it before on this episode too, where it's like, sometimes we've seen our guy friends, or we're like, do you actually like this girl because you like this girl? Mm-hmm. Or do you like this girl because of what you think she is, or what you think she can do for you?
Yeah.
Because those are two separate things. And so that's why with Jeff, I was like, Jeff, my brother, like, please, please don't be this person. You know?
Like, yeah.
Because it's like, do you really care about her, or do you just care about what she might be able to be for you? You know? Yeah.
No, that makes total sense.
So. So that was a toughie, but.
I was going to say that there's also something similar. I've had experiences similar mm-hmm. to that, where when I first meet men, they are so like into me at the beginning, right? They're like, wow, you're so, I've gotten this phrase or this like, I guess it's a compliment, which is, you're so refreshing. I've gotten that from multiple men mm-hmm. at different times. And so it kind of reminds me of the way that Jeff is with her, where he's just like, wow, she's so amazing, right? That's how at least guys at the beginning will approach me. And then the second that I start sounding like a real person with real emotions, and like, men are so afraid of women, like, this is one of the things that I'm afraid of like dating now, because if I like, now I'm afraid to show my emotions, and I'm afraid to like get emotional and show that I have feelings, because I realize that they get uncomfortable like it, and they're just like, oh no, she's a human being with real feelings, and I'll have to deal with her crying. Like, not that I cry in front of everybody, but I do have emotions. And
like similar to us, like being people of color, how people of color, like for us, we're like, we bring the fun, we bring all this stuff, whatever, and people like how we make them feel, uh-huh. like to be invited to our cookouts and blah 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 blah. Uh-huh. But the moment that we're real, it's like, oh, you're making me feel uncomfortable. I don't like
basic human rights.
Yeah, that's a lot to ask. Yeah. So I feel like the same thing with mental health stuff too. It's like, you enjoy that person for all this other stuff, but the moment they're real and be like, I'm dealing with depression, I'm dealing with this, I'm dealing with, they're like, oh no, 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 wait, wait, wait. And I think that that's
too much.
That's
a human thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, yeah. So that was
so rough. Let's hope that Jeff, like, again, we can only speculate, but I really hope that wasn't the type of person that he was. There's no way to say yes or no.
I know.
You know, like, in my heart of hearts, I truly wish that he...
Same. We hope that he was going to therapy, that he has good guy friends in his life, that he's a good man.
His mom and his dad.
Yes, you know what I'm saying? That things were all right. He just wasn't ready. But it was...
told him about it.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Yeah, if she had told him and then he was an ass, then I'd be like, Jeff, fuck you. But that's where it's like that duality piece of both of it, where you're like, both of you just
I know up. Well, I guess we should get back to the storyline.
So they both go on this date, sad as hell. She's like very she's sad, she's like barely eating.
What killed me is that Jeff actually said, you don't have a twin by any chance.
That was so rough. I was like, damn.
I don't know if I think he was trying to be funny and like,
yeah,
see if that could break the ice or whatever. But I was like, oh no. Like,
yeah, it was bad. And then I also I was laughing at this because I had to rewatch it because it's been a minute. But I was laughing at the part where it's like they have dinner. It's awkward as hell. They're both quiet. And then you think the dinner's over. She's like, oh, you want to go get ice cream? I'm like, girl, you want part two of
this? Yeah, but that's why I feel like she at least wants to do these things with someone there. But like, just complete silence. Like,
don't
talk to me. Don't talk. Don't look at me. It's hard to explain. It's like you want someone there just to be there.
Yeah. No, I understand, because I know that's something that I'm thankful for, like with like you, our friend Jenny, some of my other friends, like that I can just be myself and be sad and I don't have to feel like I have to be on, because with other people, I feel like I have to be on, I have to make them laugh, I have to do this and whatever. But if there's a day that I'm like, no, I'm sad, I can feel comfortable enough to be like, no, it's been a low day today, and I don't have to feel like I have to be on. And I think everybody that deals with mental illness, I would imagine, like, they want that. They want to just be able to be like, what? Like, I don't have to be on today. It's okay for me to be able to say, hey, I'm actually on the verge of a panic attack, and I just want you to sit with me. Or I'm having a really low day. I just want you to just sit with me, and I don't have to feel like I have to perform and do certain things for you to love me. You just love me, whatever my state is, what I mean. So I kind of got that sense throughout this episode, but especially in the food dinner stuff too, where she's like, I just want this guy to like just want to be with me. And now I am like not being this version of myself that he saw in the beginning, which is like sad as hell, but also like relatable, you know what I mean? Relatable concept.
Yeah. And when they go get the ice cream, like he's like, you see this window shot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can see that he's eating it and he's like into it, and she's just staring at her ice cream.
Like it has all the answers in the universe. In the ice cream. She was going through it. She really was. I'm like, Anne Hathaway, you really acted out the hell out of the scene.
So perfect.
It was so good. So good.
Oh, fucking
God. But yeah, but like I said, I did feel bad that she couldn't be honest about this. And then it was also hard with that guy too. It was a tough situation. But then I appreciated, like, after the date and she goes back home and she's back into bed, I love that they kind of had like a montage just kind of explaining her diagnosis and how it works, and giving a glimpse to like, okay, like when she was 15, she kind of realized like, hey, I'm spending a lot of time in bed. The parents parents didn't notice that something was wrong, even though she was like in bed for a few days. I think she said it was like 15 to 20 days. I don't know. It was like a while.
Days or
yeah. It was a while. Like she just wasn't feeling well. She was in bed. She didn't want to go to school. And I was kind of like, look, like maybe one or two days, three at most, I'm going to let my kid lay in bed. But if I'm noticing that, I can't imagine as a parent just being like, oh yeah, just let her lay it out. So 20 days, like you're just laying in bed. I don't know if the parents were just that busy or they just didn't give a shit, but I was kind of like, security.
That they were trying to figure out what was going on, because then they took her to a psychologist, like a kid psychologist, because they, you see like the mini Lexi or the young teenage Lexi go to a psychiatrist. And
but the only reason I was kind of like, huh, because she said that she was in bed for like 20 days. So I'm like, 20 days? Like it took you guys that long? I feel like at the most I give you a week that you're gonna be in this bed, and I'm like, where are we going to see what's going on? You know what I mean? So that was interesting because she's young enough that you can like even carry her. It's not like she has to really have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But whatever, that's a sad note. But she does show like, yeah, she has been in bed for a few days. Her parents finally take her to a psychologist. She finds out that she has bipolar disorder. They tell us a little bit about like some of the treatments she tried to do to see if
her coping mechanism, like that's where she learned how to overachieve when she was like she realized when she was a kid, the way that she would kind of deal with all of this, like her mental illness, was okay, even though I miss like a whole week or a whole month of school, when I'm on again, she just made up for it. And then she would be a stellar student, and she was valedictorian, and she was the beat out a whole bunch of competition from like her, I think like when trying to get a job, like after law school or whatever.
Yeah.
She was great until she had to get a job, and then they would realize that she would be gone for a week or two, and they were like, well, we cannot employ you like this.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Even though like, and we saw that at the beginning of the episode where Sylvia, her friend from work, where she was like, they call you like a hotshot, but like you're missing 4 days out of 20, which I'm like, honestly, that's not that bad, especially if you have irritable bowel syndrome or whatever else. Like that is like, to me, I'm like,
yeah,
okay. If she's still doing the work, but anyway.
Yeah. And because I think too, like, which I think it comes up with like now with us, with millennials and the ones younger than us, like we can a lot of the times get the work done in a lower amount of days than what the generations before us did. So even though like, let's say boomers and whatever, they've had things done in a week, sometimes we can get things done in like 3 or 4 days, and the work still gets done, but it's not that 80 hours or like the 40 hours a week that you're expecting, kind of thing. So even with her, it's like she's getting the stuff done. It's just not how you guys are quantifying it or how you're expecting it to be done. And so that, I don't know, that's always like a good argument sometimes for like, what is the work week? Well, really, what I mean, like, why can't we make adjustments to some of that, especially considering the person's mental health or considering the person's like other health concerns, like if they have chronic illness or whatever. You know what I mean?
I also understand feeling like you can't rely on this person because you never know when they are out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's a different, I guess, a different conversation for.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's seeing the way that she coped, right? She is incredibly intelligent, and that's how she would use her manic episodes, is like making all of her lows.
Yeah.
And then you were saying, she was going through a lot of like versions of therapy, like electroshock, drug therapy.
Some of those, I was like, oh, yoga, that's wild.
Meditation, like all the, and then she got older and she was still coping in the way that she was.
Yeah, it's true. And it's also an interesting thing too for me when I think about like just how we are as a society. It's like you have to be like this extraordinary thing sometimes. Like you can't just be, like what I mean. So I just felt bad with her too, because it's like, why can't she just be a person? Why does she have to be this extra, like this person that's like performing and doing all this extra? Like she could just be a normal ass self, and even if that means she's like mediocre at best, like that should be okay. Like she shouldn't have to. And I don't know, as a Black person, I was like, that sucks, because I can relate to like there's an expectation that we have to be like exceptional at everything or else we're not good as a people group. But it's like, why can't I just, if I wanted to be mediocre and exist that way, that should be okay too. Like I shouldn't have to be this like person that has like 20 degrees and is like doing all these freaking backflips to be considered like a person. So even with her, I'm like, that kind of sucks. Like that's how she has to like kind of overcompensate, I guess, for her illness.
Well, this concludes part one of the two-part series on modern love. I hope that so far you all have gotten something really good out of the conversations that me and Diane had about this episode. I really hope also it inspires you all to go and stream the show on Amazon because they had a lot of great episodes in general. But at the end of the day, I know since this is Mental Health Awareness Month, I'm hoping that this episode just gives you guys another way to think about mental health and mental illness and just helps you grow in your ability to have compassion for those with bipolar disorder. So with that said, I hope you guys have a good one and tune in next week for part two of Modern Love. Hey there, and thank you for joining me on this week's episode of Critical Reads. To find out more about me or to consume more of my content, please feel free to visit my website, soulsessionswithneff.com, where I share a variety of things, including blog posts, resource lists, and have a regularly updated calendar for this podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook using the handle @soulsessionswithneff. While you're at it, if you really enjoy listening to Critical Reads, I encourage you to please subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google, or Spotify, and take some time to rate us on these different platforms. Your reviews will really help the show gain some visibility and also give me some much-needed feedback on how the show is doing. I thank you in advance for your time and your support, and until next time, this has been Neff with some Critical Reads.